Today's podcast is brought to you by Health IQ and another sponsor, but right now we're going to get to Health IQ because they're back for another round after the first couple months. We touched base and I said, hey, Health IQ, how'd it go? They said, great. There are actually 16 trainiacs that have signed up and every single one of them has saved money on their life insurance.
16.
16.
That's amazing, actually.
It's a good round number. That's more life insurance than I sold ever as a life insurance advisor.
Does that say something about how good you were at that job?
Fantastic. Health IQ, very good company. We're big fans of it. Unfortunately, we can't use it because they're a US-based life insurance agency and we're up in Canada. But what they've done is they've set up life insurance specifically designed for swimmers, cyclists, runners, vegans, people who take care of themselves. And those people, like us, trainiacs, can save as much as 25% on their life insurance as opposed to paying the same as the unhealthy burger and fries sitting on the couch people.
Well, that's an amazing thing.
Great deal. Great deal. Go check out healthiq.com/triathlonTaryn or use the coupon code triathlonTaryn if you just call in and let them know that you came from us. Next sponsor, NTK, take it away.
Four Sigmatics back.
They're back with their mushroom coffee. I've been singing their praises.
You love this stuff.
Love it. I probably have it up to four times a day, and I'm going to give you guys a recipe idea that I've talked about a lot that has probably been a huge hit, one of the biggest recipe hits that we've had as Gracie scratches her collar. The bulletproof, air quotes, bulletproof coffee that's taken the world by storm. I've veganized it, and instead of just straight up coffee, I've four sigmaticized it, because using that four sigmatic cordyceps or mushroom coffee, you get antioxidants, you get adaptogens, boost your immune system, lower caffeine, less gut rot, all good things. Very tasty.
So are you drinking less actual coffee these days? I don't know this because I don't see you in the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Instead of four cups, I would say it's two cups of coffee tops and then probably two or three cups of Four Sigmatic.
Well, thanks Four Sigmatic for making Taryn healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I feel tippy top of the heap of fitness right now. Go to foursigmatic.com/triathlonTaryn to save 15%. Just straight up, or if you use the coupon code TRIATHLONTARYN, 15% off of any Four Sigmatic product. Today's guest is Matt Hansen, who we got to talk to just a few hours after his win at Half Ironman Coeur d'Alene, which you will hear in the background. We actually went and set up shop in the food tent, so there's a lot of clanging and banging and hungry, hangry triathletes that are literally just coming off the course. But it was really neat to chat with Matt, who I passed just twice in the race. The first time on the bike where he was in fourth, just hanging on. And the second time at mile two, his mile 11, where Matt was, as he put it, cruising his way to a 1:11:46 half marathon and a 3:50:09 win.
That's amazing.
Damn, that's fast.
And he didn't look tired at all.
No, the guy went, I think he took a shower. He actually went for a bike ride in between winning the race and sitting down with us. And he called it a recovery ride, looked fresh as all hell. Nice little race-ish kind of kit, matthansencoaching.com he was sporting. And I was actually pretty amazed that the guy spent some time and was willing to sit down for a podcast just hours after the race. He was in good spirits.
And you called it. You said he was going to win this race.
I did. Well, he was the number one seed at the time. The guy has had a really good, I would say, last 18 months or so, kind of getting himself into the conversation of being one of the best triathletes out there. But he's probably not that well known because he hasn't had very good Konas, which we talk about. But he did set a few standards that all pros are going to be looking to beat for the rest of the year in Ironman Texas. He set the full Ironman course record, which we talk about because it was very controversial at the time. And Matt shared how stressful that was.
He may have been number one seed. However, Andrew Starkowitz, and we'll get into that too.
That was fun. Enjoy. All right, we're here with Matt Hansen, the champion of Half Ironman Coeur d'Alene, like as of just a couple hours ago. We're sitting here in the tent. you got yourself a little bit of nosh. Congratulations, buddy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Thanks for reaching out a week ago when you saw I was going to be on the start list, and I'm glad we were able to put together a good result to have something to talk about today. I had actually never beat Andrew Starkowitz in a 70.3 before today.
Really?
So, yeah, I've beat him at every full. He's beat me at every 70.3, and we seem to race every race together. So I think we have one race different on our schedule this year. So it was kind of a running joke at the end of the race today. I said, now, Andrew, this doesn't give you liberty to beat me at Kona this year.
How do those tactics play out with you and Andrew? Like, do you basically go in knowing that you're going to be in a chase situation come the run?
Yeah, I mean, with Andrew in the race, I'm always going to be in a chase. I can't bike with him, and it would be foolish for me to try. Actually, I came out of the water with him today, which is the closest I've ever been was 90 seconds before. So to come out of the water with him and come out of transition faster than him was new territory for me. So I was actually with him through about 8 miles. Then he got away on, he descends a lot better than I do. He's a little bit of a bigger boy, than I am. So he was putting some good time into me on every descent. But then, you know, a couple other guys came up on the bike, and you know, the three guys that came off the bike in front of me were all coming from a pro cycling background. So
yeah, you had Talansky.
Talansky, and then Kenneth.
Second?
Yeah, yeah. Talansky was second, then Kenneth was third, but close behind him. And so, you know, last year was the first time I was ever first off the bike here, which again was brand new territory for me. Usually I have to do a lot of work on the run. This year I was kind of back to my comfortable having to do a lot of work on the run. So it was good to be able to put together another solid run. Yeah, I was a couple seconds slower than last year, but I had Tim Reed chasing me down last year. At the, you know, I think I outran him by just a couple of seconds, but you know, so it was just a different circumstance. I was able to kind of go into cruise control in the last 5K, and at that point it was, I had a decent sized lead and it was mine to lose, so I didn't want to do anything dumb. You know, there's really no fitness to be gained at that point going into a, you know, trying to sprint the last 5K when I'm going to take a 10-day break right after this now. So,
so
it was just protect
cruising.
The win. Yeah.
So I passed you when I was at mile 2.
Okay.
So you'd been cruising at that point, and I actually looked over and I'm like, holy shit, like, that is fast. What's a cruising pace for you?
I actually haven't looked at my data. I think I was at running 540s. I have no idea what that is in case, but
like a 310, 315.
Yeah. So I the first 5K I came off the bike, I was 4.5 minutes down. So I tried to bridge the gap early as much as I could. I knew there was an out and back at the 5K or 6K mark, and I wanted to make sure they saw me. And
got scared.
Well, I wanted to cut as much time as I could into them early and just see what the situation was at the out and back. And at that point, I was down to a minute and a half on them after the first 5K. So I backed off a little bit and just kind of played it safe. I figured at that point it was don't do anything stupid and you should be all right. You know, look at my watch and time myself to the turnaround and double it, so I know what the gap is. But when I had put 3 minutes into them that early on, you know, in 5K, I didn't really have to overthink it. You know, and then I could see them on any of the long straightaways. I could see them and just see that I was reeling them in. That's really a big motivator when you can. You know, it's really frustrating on courses where you're a minute behind, but you can't see them. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know what they're doing or how they're feeling.
Here there were a lot of turns. It must have been tough.
Early on here, there's a lot of turns. I didn't care for the first 2 miles at all. I'm kind of runner. I like to get into a flow and just kind of keep that steady stride. And those tight turns early on weren't great. And my back was really, it locked up on the bike today for some reason. And so I didn't feel great on the first 2 miles. But after I got able to get to a few straightaways, everything kind of just loosened up and I was able to find my stride.
When you guys are like in a pro race, it's got to be so much different than how I race, because I race for pace. Like I'm racing myself, but you have to race the other people. Is it kind of like track running where the time doesn't necessarily matter?
Yeah, I never go in with a time goal. It's all about executing and playing the cards that you have on the day the best as possible. You know, I'm I was able, you know, I didn't have a great bike today, but that was kind of okay because I had a really great swim. So I had 90 seconds to play with because usually I'm about 90 seconds to 2 minutes down from Andrew. So, you know, I wasn't happy with my power, but I was happy with my time. So, you know, to come off the bike only 4.5 minutes down from, you know, a great cyclist like the guys in front of me, I was pretty happy with that. And, you know, right away I thought if I have my run, I'm okay. So.
And are you basically like setting a ceiling of, I can't let them get more than 4 minutes away or 5 minutes away, because you know you can put that time, like a certain amount of time into them?
You know, you never know how you're going to feel getting onto the run. Usually I have a good run, but last year, or a couple of weeks ago at Chattanooga, I came off the bike within 5 minutes of Andrew, or 6 minutes of Andrew, and just had an awful run. I just felt terrible, and I had a really good bike. So you got to kind of play the feel a little bit, just listen to the body. And, you know, you're playing games a little bit. Like, you know, sometimes Andrew might have just really crushed it on the bike to make me hear a bigger deficit, and that gets in your head a little bit. Or, you know, so I've raced him so many times that I try not to overthink it, because I mean, I've been off the bike, you know, 20 minutes down from him at Ironman Texas and outran him, and I've been off the bike 5 minutes down from him and not been able to catch him. So at a 70.3. So it's just, you just have to race based on how you're feeling. You have numbers going in that you want to hit, but on a course like this where there's so many ups and downs, you know, there's times where it made sense to just stop, you know, or to pedal really hard for 10 seconds and then stop for 20 seconds, or, you know, do some micro bursts when you're going 50 miles an hour downhill.
Yeah. So. Well, congrats. It was fun to see you for the 3 seconds that I did.
You know, wins are, any podium is hard to come by. So when you find an opportunity to get up there, you got to take it. So.
So do you prefer the full or the half?
I'm much better at fulls typically.
Oh, really? And yeah. You prefer the extra pain of that? That's,
you know, I think 70.3s hurt more.
Really?
Like, my philosophy in a 70.3 is if at any point you're not hurting, you're not going hard enough. It's a short race, and, you know, I'm a runner in the sport anyways. So that's where I do can make up the most time, but the run is relatively short. So, you know, on a perfect day like this with conditions, people aren't going to blow up as much. So, you know, if it's 20 degrees hotter, then, you know, yeah, you can come off a little bit farther back, but when it's 70 degrees and you're getting off the bike, nobody's going to explode, or you can't count on people exploding. So you have to be closer. And so, you know, it's a lot more stressful to race 70.3s for me, because the run is, I always, you know, I've been forced so many times. I just run out of real estate, you know, cutting big time off, but just run out of room and finish 20 seconds off a podium or something like that.
So you just said that you're a runner in the sport, and like probably one of the best runners out there. How did you end up going from wrestling to being a good runner? Because I know you're a high school runner, but like I saw some times and they were like,
okay.
Decent high school times, but not like, holy crap, this guy's going to be one of the best runners in the sport kind of times.
Yeah. I mean, in high school, I was a wrestler. I loved wrestling. So I ran cross country because I would have more success there than I would on the football field. And, you know, I was decent at it for a small school, you know, but, you know, like you said, never had any amazing times. Same, you know, I injured my hip wrestling. I dislocated my hip first year at college, and that's what ended my wrestling career. And I went kind of bonkers. I had shoulder surgery, knee surgery, and a dislocated hip at the end of the year. It was a pretty good sign that my body was done with this sport, which was really tough to take. I went from working out 3 times a day to being laid up for 6 weeks, and, you know, it got to the point where I was going to the track and seeing how fast I could crutch a mile as soon as I could support myself with the shoulder.
Wow.
You know, it was a pretty tough time for me. then the rest of college, I really just focused on being the best student as I could. I was kind of a nerd. I lived in the library. My wife would second that.
You're Dr. Matt Hansen.
I am. Yes. Yeah.
Should we call you doctor then?
No, Matt's fine. So then I went on to my start working on my master's, and I went up to Southwest Minnesota State, knew nobody. I was bored out of my mind. So that's really when I started running again. I signed up for a marathon, which I wasn't able to do because of work. But I started training for that, and I bought a eBay special bike for like $400, and I ate nothing but ramen noodles for a month because I splurged on that.
For 30 days.
You know, every now and then I would splurge and have a can of soup, but you know, it was just good for me to be out, blow off stress. I was traveling a lot, so running's easy to do from a hotel. You don't have to, you know. So I started to kind of teach myself to swim again at that point. I'd been in the pool as a little kid, but hadn't been in the pool since I was probably 10. And, you know, when I was 16, I was challenged by one of my mentors in wrestling to make a list of 50 goals for the next 10 years of life.
I was going
to
ask you about that.
And for some reason, I have no idea why, I put to do an Ironman on that. And so when I was 25, I said, well, I should sign up for Coeur d'Alene because that's the only one that I can sign up for that gets by that 10-year date. And so that's what brought me here. I completely planned on being one and done, just doing it to tick the box. It was one of the last goals on the list that I could go after. And ended up qualifying for Kona here. Had no idea
first
what I was doing. First crack, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I think I biked a 5:30, but ran a 3 flat. So, you
that'll
know, I made
it
up for a little bit. And, you know, just was completely clueless. And so my wife and I decided that we would make the sacrifice. We were both finishing or working on our doctorate at the time, you know, trying to pay for it without doing extra loans and stuff like that. So we had nothing. We were living in a tiny apartment that had, I think it was $200 a month, and we were stealing internet from the school, and because we were right across from the university, and you know, it was.
So you decided to go into the most expensive.
So we went
sport
to the expensive place. Yeah. So I went to Kona. And you know, completely still had no idea what I was doing, but unfortunately, that's still the best executed day I've had at Kona, unfortunately. But you know, that's when I fell in love with the sport. Leaving the Big Island, I'm like, you know, I think I have more that I can give. And so I thought I found my lifelong hobby.
Really?
And
yeah.
Clearly, it's worked out for you.
But you continued on with your doctorate, and like
yeah.
you got that, and you
yeah.
were a professor for years while you were doing triathlon, right?
Yeah, I finished my doctorate. You know, I competed as an amateur for 2 more years. I qualified for my elite card at Ironman Texas in 2013. Never planned on taking it. Went back to Kona in October of 2013 and ended up with 3 flats. I really thought I could win the age group there. And I ended up with 3 flats. I think I finished 8th or something like that. I sat on the road for over 25 minutes.
Still 8th with 3
yeah,
flats.
I think I ran a 2:56 there or something like that. So that helped. I ran pretty angry, which is not something that I would recommend to your listeners, but I got away with it because again, I was clueless. And just
whatever motivates you, man.
Yeah.
Whatever motivates you.
I think I went through the 10 mile at 58 minutes. And then I'm like, oh, I should probably back off a little bit. But, and I was so upset about that. You know, I think I went 9:03 or 9:04 there. And I went 9 flat at Ironman Texas. And I was really fit. And I was so upset that I didn't have the day that I wanted that I took my pro card so I could race Ironman Arizona a couple of weeks later because you couldn't register as an amateur. And so that's why I took my elite license, was because that race went so poorly. And at Arizona, I got 18th and I was on cloud 9. Like I wasn't last. There was a, you know, a couple guys behind me. I had a 30-minute PR. I was like, this is great. So I kind of planned on working and then just competing as an elite or as a pro at that point. I probably couldn't classify myself as a pro at that point because I wasn't making any money. But, you know, that was my plan. I never planned on going full time in the sport. ended up winning Chattanooga in 2014. So I'm like, cool, I can get paid to do a hobby. This is awesome. And then I came back in 2015, had a really good off season, really good build up, and ended up winning Texas, the North American Champs, for the first time in 2015. And I won the race, and then I had to give the award, you know, stay there. I got to stay there, give the last hour finishers. That's something that's awesome about this sport, is when you win the race, you come back and hand the finisher medals to all the finishers in the last hour. Got no sleep that night, had to wake up early, get in the pool, do a swim, then gave my award speech. And then I drove 17 and a half hours home, arrived at 7:30 in the morning, went straight to the school, showered, and taught 8, 9, 10, and 11 that day. And on the way home, I talked to my coach a lot. He's like, I really think that this is something that you can make work full time. And I mean, I love teaching. Do you guys have tenure? Yeah. Yeah, I was 6 months away from tenure at that point.
Oh my gosh.
But, and you know, so it was weighing on my mind. And then 2 days later, I met with a student and I'm like, you know, we've got to set you up with this internship and this internship over the summer, so we can set it so we chase, you can chase after what it is you want most. And I sat back, I'm like, crap, I'm being a hypocrite here. I mean, I love teaching and I do miss the classroom. I don't miss the politics of higher education, but I miss the classroom. And you know, but it was time to chase a dream at that point. And I think I have what it takes to win Kona someday. Maybe it never happens, but I don't want to look back at age 45, 50 and wonder what if. Now I'll know. So I've been able to, you know, I quit my job then, and then I proceeded to have the three worst races of my career.
And thought, oh my gosh,
and like,
have
what
I made
did
a mistake?
I do? And, you know, it that was a tough time. It was, but the last straw was at Cannes. I went all the way over there, crashed out of the race. I was just at a low point and I was flying back. That's a long flight to be very uncomfortable with road rash and all that stuff. And it was just a lot of thinking time. And I came to the mindset that I wasn't racing for the right reasons anymore. I was racing to try to earn a living instead of racing for the process and to just see what I could do. And that's what got me up to that point in 2015. And, you know, I've made that mental switch and it's been much better since then. I'm a much happier person. I can shut off from triathlon at 5 o'clock at night. My training's done. You know, I usually have my coaching done by 5 o'clock and then I can be with my wife and just enjoy the evening, play with the dogs, work in the garden, you know, just stuff that I like to do. And so it's just been, you know, it's just been a total different mindset and just a much, much more positive way to enter each race. Like, honestly, I don't enter a race. I've only entered one race saying I'm going here to win and had that work out well. Usually it's just I'm here to execute the best day possible. And I race better that way, usually.
So now you said you've got 10 straight days off. Is
yes.
it going to be actual off or will it be quote unquote active recovery?
I'll be in the pool as much, like pretty much every day. I'm not great in the water. I need to keep my feel, but you know, 30 minutes swimming isn't going to add much stress to the body. I'll bring my road bike to Germany because we're going to Germany. My wife is racing Challenge Rote next weekend. Yeah, so
he gets to be the Sherpa, which
yes,
is very exciting.
It's my turn.
Yes.
My wife is like super Sherpa, and I have big shoes to fill.
Yes, we Sherpas, we are very good at our jobs.
It is a rare find to find a really good Sherpa, and you know, I tell you what, like I've won a couple races. There's the most addicting feeling in the world is the hug at the finish line when you've done it, because it's such a team. Like Ashley has made so many sacrifices to allow me to do this and to pursue this dream. And, you know, you can't beat that feeling when, you know, you get to say we did it, because
yeah.
it is a we.
Well, and it's more stressful though to watch her race, I'm sure, because you're not in control of it.
I would so much rather be racing.
Right?
So much rather be racing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that trip. I'll bike around a little bit. I don't know if I'll run or not. We'll see how the legs feel. I already got my recovery run in for the day, or ride in for the day. We went a couple or an hour and a half after the race and just rode around a little bit, cheered on the back half of the bikers, which was a lot of fun. Just got the body moving again. And yeah, so I'll do a lot of mobility. Physically, I'm sitting okay right now. I haven't really had a break since October, end of October. So mentally, I'm ready. Like, I'm tired. Mentally, yeah. The last 3 weeks, you can tell. Like, when I start getting crabby and hangry all the time and just short fuse, you're cutting it close to, that's when injuries happen. And so I think, I get to enter a break on a high note, which is great. It's not very often that you get to the end of the build and get to go out on a win. So we'll take it.
Was the North American Championship drama, was that stressful?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
To bring people up to speed, if they don't know, like, you and Mel Hothschild and a number of people set all kinds of records on the day, and then Ironman went back and forth between invalidating it, validating it, invalidating.
And this was because of a drafting.
Because of drafting.
Well, and the bike course was 3K short. Yeah, it wasn't a fun time. Usually at the award celebration, like you saw today, all the pros are there, happy, just it's a fun time. You get to catch up. And at the awards at Texas, like everybody was sour. It was a really it was frustrating.
Had Ironman at that point already started saying that everything was
no, it wasn't Ironman. It was the media, social media. People were just getting attacked by people, 2,000 miles away from the race who think they know, and then, you're watching it and it's like, oh, the run course was 5 miles short. Then,
5 miles.
Yeah, short. I mean, I literally heard that the bike was only I went from the bike was 3K short to the bike was 20K short to the bike was only 150K. Like, these are the things that you're seeing. Like, there was just so much negativity around something that, like, when you turn yourself inside out, and I mean, that was the race itself was super stressful. I've never had somebody run in my back pocket for 25 and a half miles. Like, I was pushed every step of the way, and I finally got a break or broke away from him in the last half mile or three quarters of a mile. That's where I got the Ivan Tatukin. I came off the bike in front of him, but he had a faster transition. I caught him at the quarter mile mark, and he sat in my back pocket the rest of the time. And to run a 2:34 whatever it was, just feel like crossing the finish line on like the most high that I've ever been, seeing the time, seeing the run that I did, and then just everything after, it was tough. And it's kind of a rock and a hard place because I'm teammates with Tim Don as well, that it's like, how do you manage that situation with, he was the previous record holder, and it was just, it definitely extended the recovery quite a bit. I mean, stress is stress, right? The body can't tell the difference if it's physical stress or emotional stress or mental stress. It all adds up. And so when you have a race that, I don't think I could have gone a second faster, and on the run anyways, and I was completely smashed, and then to have all that emotional stuff going on afterwards, and I didn't do a good job of filtering out all the negative comments. Like, for every 5 negative comments, there's 150 positive comments, and you just remember the negative ones, unfortunately.
Pro tip, get your friendly Sherpa to manage a lot of the comments.
Yeah. And my wife was awesome, and just she was patient and tried to just remind me of all the positive ones that I was getting. And but it's tough. You do something like, you have a great day like that, and you just want it to be a great day. And I don't want to get too far into this, but I really think that I'm really glad that Ironman just signed that deal with the I think Facebook and another media company. Yeah, I really think if people would have been able to see that race, it would have been a totally different story. You know, there were so many positive things that could have come out of that, and they just got lost. Like, you know, Mel had a great time there, but I think it's like she won three different regional championships. That's huge. Like three very different course profiles. That's really tough to do. You know, I won for the third time. No one's won the same regional championship three times. Andrew's bike split. You know, Matt Russell coming back, Will Clark coming back after a collarbone. There's so many positive things that just got lost in all the negativity about, you know, the age group drafting. And, you know, everybody wanted to bash Ironman for that. And, you know, yeah, they could have done things differently, but Ironman can't teach integrity. Like, it's your choice to cheat, right? I mean, it comes down at the end of the day, it's your choice.
And that has nothing to do with the pro race.
And yeah, I mean, the pro women got into that a little bit because the age group men caught up to them. And so there was some issues there. But the pro men, it was a clean race. So, you know, it is what it is.
Lessons, you know, learned all around, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, by everybody. You know, I don't know what they'll do with that course next year. It was the exact same course as last year. There was no issues there last year for, you know, this year was different. But, you know, we had, I think a big part of it on the men's side was we had like perfect conditions for a fast day. No wind, 65 degrees, and cloud cover. You know, it's just like you can't draw up a better condition for fast. Plus, you had, you know, 10 guys who can really run, get off the bike together. And so, you know, when you have that, like, we're all competitors. When you have somebody running that close to you, it pushes you. And so, I mean, it's just all those conditions made for a fast day. And, I remember some guys like, if you think that the tweet was, if you think that Matt Hansen actually ran a 2:34, you're effing delusional. And so I just replied with my file and said, sorry to disappoint. You know, it's just like, I'm just not dealing with this.
What is with those people, right? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's, people are talking about the race, and that's what I'm reminding myself to now. At least people care enough about the sport to talk about it the next day, because we need that. Like, we need it to be positive, or be much better if it's positive. But I mean, Ironman popularity is not at its all-time high right now. So we need people talking about the sport. So, you know, at least people care about it to go off.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, you think about the NFL, for example, but pull up Twitter on any given Sunday and it is people angry, but they're tuning in next Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's aren't, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, at least we have the Monday morning armchair quarterbacks or whatever you want to call it. It's like that, at least we're relevant. Yeah. If no one says anything, that's a scary thing, because that means nobody cares.
But it sucks to go through. It still sucks to go through.
It does. It's not fun, but, you know, I went through it once. Now I'll be better at it the next time. And, you know, it's always learning. And it's part of being a pro. You know, you're always going to have people who, you know, no matter what you do, are going to find something off with it. But you're always going to have people that, even on a terrible race, are going to say, you're the best, you know, I'm still your number one fan. You know, so it's just focusing on the latter half and, you know, dealing with the other people when you need to, and letting it go when you should.
I just want to go circle around to something non-triathlon for a second. You are Dr. Hansen, and I just wanted to know a little bit about what you studied. What was your doctorate in?
So I was in charge of the exercise science program at the University in Storm Lake, which is where I still live now. Not a triathlon hotbed at all.
Like Winnipeg.
Yeah. My wife is still at the college working there now, so we were both there. We both planned on, you know, having the university lifestyle where you work a lot for 9 months and, you know, have a little bit of flexibility over the summer. Well, that kind of went away. That's helped my triathlon a lot. It's helped me with some sponsors a lot. Like with First Endurance, I'm on their research board, so I've actually had a lot of input in developing the products that I use, like EFS Pro. I did a lot of the back-end research, and that's what I use on the race day. So it's definitely helped me in my career. It's helped me with coaching. It's helped me with my training as well. And
well, I was just going to say, you must look at training way differently than a lot of other athletes who don't have that very specific inside kind of knowledge that you have.
I do. I really try not to, though. Like, I was at the point with a previous coach that I was looking at it too much, and looking, you know, it's just like, well, I think I might do this differently. And then that creates this little shadow of doubt. And you can't have doubt on the start line. You have to get to the start line thinking you did everything right. And, you know, that was on me. And so now I'm working with Julie Dibbins and Matt Bottrell. Matt's in charge of my bike, and then Julie's kind of the overall stress manager. And I literally look at one day at a time. I look at what I have to do the next morning, right before I go to bed. What time do I have to wake up? What's my sessions? Okay, you know, I might look a little bit ahead just to see like how much time I need to allocate each day, but it's one day at a time. And, you know, I analyze everything after the fact, probably overanalyze everything after the fact, but I really don't try not to overanalyze it too much earlier or like before during the build. And, you know, as long as the results that I'm getting stay consistent, then it's easy to do that. When I start, you know, if I ever start hitting a little bit of a tough patch, then, you know, that's kind of what got me overthinking things before. So. Mm-hmm.
So after you decide to hang up your runners many years from now, would you go back to what
you know? I don't know. I don't think so. I'd like to keep. I mean, I've worked really hard to build up my coaching business to be what it is now. It's got a good infrastructure right now, so when I need to rely on that for income, I think I'll be able to. It's really grown a lot in the last year and a half. And, you know, when I started it, my goal was to get to 50 athletes, not me personally coaching. I would never coach that many. But between me and my assistants and everything, to get to 50 athletes before I retired. And now we're sitting at like 90 something between all of our coaches, which has been a lot of fun to just watch it grow and to just have that social environment. And, you know, I think we have 9 coaches right now. I started a coach mentoring program where, you know, I think doing a 2-day certification is a good start, but you can't learn to be a coach in 2 days. It took me 8 years and I still don't know enough. Like, I'm still constantly trying to learn. So I work with, you know, a coach or somebody who wants to be a coach for a year as like a apprenticeship type thing. And if it all goes well, I bring them on as an assistant coach. And if it doesn't, then, we got a year of working together. And so it's been a good way to help grow the business and have a little bit of control over the quality of coaching that I'm I'm able to bring on board too.
I ask every very technically inclined person this question because I'm a former finance guy and can't get away from making spreadsheets. What do you still make spreadsheets on in triathlon?
I have one spreadsheet with everything. It's got like 30 pages. It's so ridiculous. But you know, I need to find a better way of managing things because like I'm a to-do list and my internet tabs are the to-do list. And so I have like 12 tabs open on the internet all the time.
I'm a tab person.
Yeah. So, you know, I've got tabs that are just there perpetually, like, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, always up. My training peaks. I've got my training peaks and my coaching training peaks always up. My website's always up. And then whatever else I have to work on, like if I have something I need to do for a sponsor, I just open up their webpage and that's what I put up, you know, that's my reminder that, oh yeah, I have to do that. Instead of like writing it down, I have that visual tab. But I use the Training Peaks metrics for my training side of things. I have spreadsheets for the athletes that I coach, for how I want to do their builds, what races they have, what their send-off intervals are, things like that. And then obviously all the sponsors think like my sponsor agenda, how often I need to be doing A, B, C, and D, that type of thing. Yeah. So one spreadsheet, but it's pretty involved.
One spreadsheet
involved.
To rule them
yes.
all.
Yes.
What, did you take anything from wrestling? Because I've heard a number of people that came from wrestling and end up, I suppose, learning a huge amount of life lessons that people who aren't in wrestling wouldn't really realize how technical it is, how much of a formative sport it is.
Yeah, I mean, wrestling is I learned my work ethic from my dad and my uncle and my grandpa. I worked on the farm. I worked at my uncle's truck shop. And then I worked with my dad all through high school, college. You know, that's what gave me the work ethic. But that was refined in wrestling by far. I learned goal setting with wrestling big time. That was huge for, I mean, that's why I'm here now, is because of a goal I set when I was 16. And, you know, so that skill was definitely one of them. But actually, that's gotten me in trouble a little bit, because the wrestling mindset is always more is better. And that's not the triathlon mindset. Like in wrestling, you have to be, or I had to be, the hardest working person, because I have pipe cleaner arms and legs. That, you know, I was never the stronger of the two guys that were on the mat at the time. So I had to be in better shape, and I had to be smarter, and otherwise I was going to get beat. And so it was always trying to outwork everybody in the room. You can't do that in triathlon. You have to have really hard days, and when it's time to go easy, you need to go easy. And that's taken me a lot of time to accept. I don't like going easy. It's not fun for me. I think my coaches almost kicked me to the curb a couple times, because I just, you know, especially on the run, I'm not comfortable running slow. Like, it doesn't feel right. Like, I need to be a full stride. Otherwise, I just don't like running. And so it's taken a lot of back and forth. We finally found a happy medium, I think. I think she would agree with that. But it's taken a bit of time, and it's working. So,
who in triathlon do you want to run against that you haven't yet? Because there's a lot of good runners coming up into full distance racing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good runners. You know, it'll be interesting to see what the ITU guys that are coming up. You know, Brownlee wants to go to 70.3 Worlds to qualify for Kona. You know, how will he handle the transition? You know, obviously, Javier coming to fulls. There's so many different dynamics. It just takes being in the right setting. Patrick, he obviously runs very well, and he can do it in the heat. I have raced him, in Kona, obviously, but I had a terrible day. He had an amazing day. I raced him in Texas in 16 when I decided to take a nap on the side of the road for 25 minutes or so with 2 miles left.
Oh my.
But you know, there's so many guys that I don't think I could pick one. To be honest, if I'm coming off the bike with any of those guys, it's been a great day. So, because they're all good, you know, it's so many of the best runners are really good swimmers too, and so I've got a lot of work to do to put myself in a position to be able to duel them on the run. So I'd love to be able to run with any of those guys, because that means I had a great swim and hung tough on the bike. So
what's the rest of the season got in store for you after the rest?
I'll start my build to Kona. I'm looking forward to a few days off, and then I think I'll race Steelhead, and then that's the closest 70.3 to me. So I had a good race there last year, and then I think I'll go to Augusta this year, get a heat race in me. I'll probably go somewhere warm for a training camp before Augusta. Don't know where that is. I did Kona last year. I did my build in Tacoma in Tucson. I won't go back there. I love training in Tucson, but it's too much of a dry heat. I would love to go back to the Woodlands. I've got a great family that I stay with there. It's just the open water swimming. I need a little bit of that, and it's not the best situation there. So I might go to Maui, might go. There's a few people that Julie coaches that have qualified, so I'll pick somewhere that works for everybody with the races that we have coming up.
Would Clearwater be on the list of potentials at all?
That's a possibility. Claremont is possible. We have a few options, but it'll just depend where everybody wants to go and what the flights are looking like for everybody too. Because unfortunately, the tens of dollars that we make for racing is
you
gotta be
made
careful.
Dozens of dollars up on stage there today.
Yeah.
Are you taking any sort of different approach into Kona this year?
Yeah, I'm taking my break much later. Last year, I took it right after Ironman Texas, which was great. I definitely felt like I wanted a break this year, especially after all that happened. But this year I really wanted to have my break when Ashley's racing in Germany. So it'll be, I won't have the stress of trying to figure out how to train hard in a full build when I'm not in a, you know, in a situation I've been, or a, an environment I've been in before. But I ended up getting sick about 2 weeks before Kona last year. I got super fit really fast and I peaked in the end of September, and I got sick shortly after that. Because I just had too long of a build. So we're shortening up that build. And I think that I'm hoping that that means I'll peak at Kona this year instead of too early and try to hang on.
Got it. And where should people check you out? You talked about the coaching and...
Sure. So new website will be Matt Hansen Racing. That'll be officially live, or it's live now, but it'll be an officially released here in a couple of weeks, hopefully. I've got a little bit more work to do on that. But all my personal stuff is at Matt Hansen Tri, and that's Hansen with an O.
I'll link everything up. Yeah.
Sounds good.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, thanks for putting this together.
Well, congrats on a great day.
Congrats on the day.
Yeah.
Thank you much.
Yeah.
We'll take them when they come.
If there was anything on the podcast that you heard and you want to know more about, you can visit our show notes at triathlonterran.com/topics/triathlonterranpodcast. We'll have all of the links listed there. Any other info that you may not have had time to write down or whatever, it's listed there for you in perpetuity.
Something newer, juicier, freer.
We love free.
We've had resources kind of scattered throughout the website for the past year that we've built up. Well, I have put that all on one single page on the website at triathlonterran.com/free resources. Just by entering your email address, you can get a free swim drill program, a free strength training program, a running drill program. And as we start coming out with things, everything will be there. So you can check it now. You can check it later.
Come early, come often.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be adding stuff all the time, so make sure you check it out frequently. Also, if you've got questions for Taryn, and many of you do, and you leave them in the YouTube comments, Facebook, Instagram, etc., we're trying to aggregate that all into one spot so everybody can see and hear the answer. And that's why we've now launched the Triathlon Trainiask podcast, because it's Trainiacs asking questions. So what we want you to do is head over to triathlonterran.com/trainiask. If you have a question, you'll record it and Taryn may answer it on the podcast. He's recording them every single weekday, and you can find the podcast on every single podcast player out there. And Trainiask is spelled TRAINIASK.
Short nuggets of info. Every right. episode, I guarantee under 10 minutes.
Perfect.
And it's hard to get me to stop talking. So this is a feat. Finally, last thing that you can do is, if you like this show or the Trainiask show when you check it out, head over to iTunes, give us a review, good, bad, indifferent. Hopefully 5 stars, because we're pretty awesome.
Reviews just really help us out.
It really helps with the iTunes algorithm. However it happens, it works. It's internet magic and helps other new or aspiring Trainiacs discover us. So that would be much appreciated.
Thanks, folks. See you next time.